This video is kindly sponsored by Project Red. Check the link in the description to find out more. This video is made possible by 3D Musketeers, offering full-service product development, prototyping, and production, helping you make awesome from art to part. Links in the description.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's Meet a Maker. Hi, Faye. How you doing?
Good morning, Billy. Or should I say good evening?
It is
my
evening,
morning is yes. Always your evening and vice versa.
Good morning to you, yes. And I am really excited this week, and I know Faye is too, because we are meeting Joseph from Project Red, printer maker extraordinaire. So excited. How are you?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Good, good, good.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, and we can just edit this out if I'm wrong, you are the reason for the show, are you not?
No, I wouldn't say you, that. I mean,
This is kind of like your show.
Yes.
No, I
feel like
I threw a silent partner.
He's going to be all quiet.
This is not what I thought she would do. Like, it was more of just like, I was wanting to support what she was doing. And then she's like, added my name on stuff. I was like, no, like, call out a maker that you found that could use the attention. And then, like, a week later, this started happening. And I was like,
good idea. Very good idea.
She went above and beyond, like, what I thought, like was the idea of what to do. And she's made her own thing.
Yeah, so for those not in the know,
you provided an opportunity for us to hang out and get to talk to amazing people. So I'm so glad that you've helped to
botch that,
make this be a thing, because I'm here and I wouldn't be here otherwise.
I watch it every week, so I'm excited. Like, I like it. It's part of my routine now. So
Well, you're clearly a mensch as well. Like, Billy keeps bringing on all the best mensches, so I'm very happy about this. It's basically, it's always just the feel good hour and a half. So
yeah,
who wouldn't like that?
Exactly. Like
that? No,
that's who.
So far, my favorite one was SJ.
Yeah, just because like amazing SJ. So cool.
You can tell she likes. She really loves what she does, and she knows what she's doing, because she can explain what she's doing down to like a kindergartner level, and like
the person knows
what they're talking about when they can explain it down to a kindergartner level.
That's the tell, isn't it? That somebody really knows what they're talking about, that they can adapt the language to somebody who doesn't know anything. Yeah, exactly. If you can explain it to maybe not a kindergartner, but if you can explain it to a layman. Then, you know your stuff for sure. 100%.
Definitely.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was such a fun one to do as well. Like, we both love SJ, so it was like a big hangout session. It was so great.
Yeah. So did you guys...
We're very lucky.
Did you guys meet in the Women of 3D Printing groups?
Yes. I met SJ in the Australian Women in 3D Printing group. She was just like trialing them all around the world and going and meeting all the different ones, and popped into the Australian one, and we just loved her from day dot.
Yeah. Yeah,
loved SJ. Yeah. So yes, so she's an honorary Australian.
I totally came into the group later, so that is not how I met these lovely
But you have come I into totally that group. In That's an awesome group. Like, the people in that group are incredible. Like, it's crazy. The whole Women in 3D Printing group of like, when you get them talking, like on the Slack channel, it is just the most high tier additive manufacturing people on the planet. Like, it's just this group of like power people. They're all doing freaking incredible things, like, you know, printing organs or spaceships or whatever. You know, it's just like wild. Yeah.
It totally strikes me that the conversations that happen in that group are either like the highest tier additive manufacturing, the smartest, like just like crazy high level stuff. Or it's very lowbrow.
Yeah, we do a lot of them. Adult jokes. Because it's a happy hour, you know. We're all drinking.
I love that. I love that it's a bunch of real people who happen to be very, very smart and really know their stuff, but they're also just real people.
Well, I'm sure the...
I was going to say, we're actually here to talk about you today.
Yes.
Not other groups of people. And I know I for one would appreciate a good proper introduction. Who is Joe? What are you known for? What do you make? Who are you?
Yeah, I'm Joe. That's who Joe is. One of those. It seems like there's about a million of them.
And there really Joe's, is. Many Joe's. Yeah, lots of Joe's.
Yeah.
You're R3D Joe.
Yes. So I run Project R3D, pronounced Project Red. But I make 3D printers, and that's pretty much what we're known for. We really became like the household name for more of a household name when we started doing the Railcore printers. Yes. We helped out Railcore Labs team, and we did all their production and actually made the kits from their open source design. And then we recently branched out and went back into doing our own printers again, because we did previously, we had done a lot of industrial stuff, and we got a little bit into the consumer market, but it mostly went into education at the time. Okay. And then switched to the Railcore stuff, just because the stuff we were doing in education, literally, when I looked at the bomb of the Railcore, we pretty much had the same bomb, except for like two things were different. So we were able to spin up that production very quickly. We actually sat down and met with the Railcore Labs guys on like September 20th, and October 6th, we shipped our first unit. So like, it didn't take very long.
Yeah. Wow. What? Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah.
So yeah, it was just a couple things. We just had to do a couple different wiring harnesses and stuff like that, but that's how we got into that. And then but we really got big when Joel Telling did a review of the Railcore, and that's where the first unit actually went. It went to an awesome guy on the West Coast that bought it, that he didn't want to build it. Somebody else built it. And he knew Joel Telling, so Joel Telling did a review, because Joel ran into the Railcore at Murph.
Okay.
And I think that was Murph 2018? Yeah.
I was going to ask, how long ago was this?
Murph was 2018. We started the company, and we formed, like, actually took the name and made sure everything, like, we legally binded the company in 2017.
Okay.
And in February of 17, but I was doing 3D printing stuff, building 3D printers for clients since like 2014.
What got you into that? What got you into printing? And have you always made stuff, and you just printing is another thing you do? Or yeah.
I was that one of those kids that always had crazy ideas. So I still have like my big like drawing pads that had designs. I had like books like how to design houses and stuff like that, and then all these other just crazy off the wall ideas. But the problem was, like, I grew up in the middle of nowhere Indiana, where like we didn't have a machine shop in our high school, we didn't have anything like that. So
yeah,
making something was something you couldn't really do unless you had a lot of money, which grew up in a farming town, like, not everybody, like, yeah. People didn't have a lot of money. And so, you couldn't, unless you could go to Home Depot and buy a couple 2x4s and make it, you weren't making it.
Yeah.
Or unless you, like, got into a trade where you were, like, a pipe fitter or something like that, and the things you wanted to work with were circular tubes. Like, that's how you built things. But when 3D printing came around, and, like MakerBot and PrinterBot started doing their Kickstarters and stuff like that, I was just getting out of high school. So I got an printer.
I'm like sitting here now trying to date you,
I got out of high school. I graduated in December of 2009. I graduated
early. Oh, I was 2008. There you go.
Yeah.
West
Simlin. Oh, you're You're young. Yeah, everyone's so young. We keep getting youngins on the show. Oh my gosh.
So yeah, I just got out and I decided to start building my own stuff. And like, this was back when you had to like go to Home Depot and buy, like, I remember using threaded rod for my lead screws, and I don't want to ever go back to that.
Never again.
Battle days.
Skateboard bearings. Yeah.
And like, it became like a gateway drug to, it's like, oh, these are all the crazy things you wanted to build and the crazy ideas. And like, now you can spill them out onto a page. And like, before it was just spilling out onto a page. And now it's like, you can come up with something. And I remember printing wind turbine blades for like the first, like, 6 months, just crazy, like, stupid ideas for wind turbine blades, because I met some guy in Chicago when I was hanging out in Chicago one day, and I was eating lunch in the Hancock building, at the top of the Hancock building, in the observation deck, mm-hmm. and that week, they had a alternative energy conference going on at the big, it's called McCormick Place in Chicago. Well, he was from France, currently living in Nevada, working for an alternative energy company. And
I got a lot of wide open space in Nevada.
Yeah, so like,
I was thinking why.
Yeah, so him and I were talking, and we were talking about alternative energies and stuff like that, and then I got addicted to alternative energy for there for a little while, and then
Way worse things to be addicted to. Just saying. Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So, and then it got really bad, because then Micro Center started carrying filament, and then I had an endless supply of filament and bad ideas.
I miss Micro Center.
And we're still doing it to this day. Yeah. It's definitely not an addiction.
Yeah. No, definitely not. No.
Yeah. Like, I got into actually building my own printers, mainly because the industry kind of stagnated. We kind of plateaued. Things got really cool. And then we just kept putting the same parts in the same machines and calling it and putting a different number on it. Mm-hmm. And then saying, okay, give me your $3,000. But even like the cheaper printers, they were like, okay, give me $1,000. What's the difference? Well, we're using the same frame, the same board, the same hot end. But the number on the front of it looks a little bit different.
But we have a slightly different form factor that all these things fit into.
Yeah, we were no longer taking strides. We were taking baby steps. And I got tired of it, especially since, like, there was a lot of, like, really weird things that I didn't like. Like, it's like, okay, we're going to put this real heavy frame that you can't really use for anything else except for this. It's the same frame as last year's frame, but it's got different stuff in it. Why can't we give you an upgrade?
Different just color.
Like, update your current frame to what it is now. Oh, well, because then we can't make $1,000 off of you. Yeah. There's a lot of just, granted, it's businessy stuff, but it just bugged me. And then, like, we stagnated for so long, and there's still, and like, that's the first thing I was doing. I was like, I built the printer, and I was like, it was pretty much a call out to like large companies that just kept pushing out the same thing. And like, what did there's you, several.
Sorry, no, you go. Go I was going to ask what you did differently and how you pushed it forward.
That's a
what
great were some question.
Of the
that's
developments so and the what are the stuff you're proud printer, of? I don't know.
Yeah, the first printer we built was currently we have the Daedalus, which is one of those.
It's amazing.
And then before the Railcore, the stuff that we were doing, like production line machine stuff, it was called the D series. It was the Daedalus series of printers. And we had it was called the D2880 and the 1440, and it was cubic inch build volume. So I would do cubic like centimeter, but the number would be too big. That's why I did. I hate Imperial. Don't get me wrong. But so what we did differently was we built a frame that stuck around. The frame actually expires this year. So what we did was we were constantly doing updates to them.
What do you mean it expires?
So we did a year time frame for that frame. That frame was going to be relevant for this many years. So all the updates we would do over that time, so we would do small increments. We upgraded the boards. We upgraded several motor miles. We did a bunch of different little
upgrades. I wasn't certain if you meant like a patent. The patent was going to expire or something. No. Okay.
No. So, yeah, no, we did a frame that we said, okay, everything we do inside this frame for the next so many years, you are going to be able to do to your unit. Your unit is going to be, if we came out with something in 2021, your unit from 2017 would be able to be upgraded to the 2021 model.
That's cool. That's really cool.
And then,
it's also smart that you put a limit on it, actually, now that I think about it.
Well, there were certain things that we knew we were going to run into. And so, like, the Daedalus is actually a combination of what we learned from the D-Series and a combination of what we learned from the Railcore production. So, like, the frame of that thing is like the old Daedalus, except for much more robust. And that's something we just learned over time with shipping printers. And that frame is something you could jump up and down on and not have to worry about it.
I love it.
So, like, that's the kind of stuff, like, I wanted to make something that could easily be updated. And everything was replaceable with a couple bolt-on options. Of those
totally
older
just pulling
machines.
Up your site. Because I want to look at this stuff while you're talking about it. So yeah,
the Daedalus is amazing. Like, I'd even love to, like, if we could, like, a little bit talk about the kinds of cool things that the Daedalus has, like the Jewett and the tramming and the, like, just all the cool things. Like, what are your favorite parts of the machine? And yeah, what, I don't know, because I do think it does some really different stuff to a lot of what's on the market.
So yeah, the main control board we're using now is the Duet 3. It's a little overpowered.
So fancy.
We're using, like, so the drivers on this thing are rated for 6 amp. We don't use that, but because it's rated for 6 amp,
so cool.
If they heat up due to the machine's temperature, we're not going to be getting skip steps or anything like that. We're not going to get overheating because they don't, like, they're overkill. Yeah.
That's good for Australia. It's very hot here. Often.
the nice thing about the Duet 3s is the amount of I.O. we are allowed to use. So, like, all of this bottom part of the board can be... So, like, we use... Like, our display goes to this plug. We have a filament sensor. We also... And the rest of it could just be end stops and then probes. Like, this whole bottom could just be pretty much
cool
anything.
Cool attachment
then,
things,
And then LED strips can be attached here. So, like, the nice thing is, like, this has got onboard Ethernet. If I drop.
And which board is this again?
This is the
Duet 3.
Okay, thank you. That's what I thought you said, but I wanted to, like,
yeah. So
categorize it in my brain.
So I was looking at the Duet 3 Mini that I had a pre-production model, and it's a great board. The problem was then we'd have to do an expansion to get to the 6 drivers, and we need 6 drivers. We use all 6 drivers, and this has it on board. So it can do CAN bus, so we can expand to a bunch of different things, and we're currently actually working on things that are using the CAN bus, which makes it a big difference.
Or is it Secret Squirrels?
I've been playing with an IDEX one, but I don't like it, mainly because it's just IDEX has a learning curve all on its own. And I have a tool changer one sitting next to it that I use a lot more. So, and it's using E3D's tool changing equipment.
Okay.
And, but it's all in the same frame. That's kind of something we've kept, is all the stuff's across the same frame. So... And then we've got some newer stuff coming that we have a 400 by 400 printer that's using the Duet 3 and servos.
Faye is in the market for a larger printer.
So, like, this thing's going to be a big. I got to say, like, probably one of my. It's sitting here. I just saw it. This is an old one that I replaced. But, like, all the stuff on our printer in the build chamber is either aluminum milled. 60 or Mike 6 now. We're doing 6061, but Mike 6 wasn't much more, and it's more consistent, and we're able to, it bounces back at, like, so if you have like a bow over a distance, it will bounce back more, and you're not gonna really have it. It's not gonna hold that memory of the bad bow.
That's cool.
So everything that is inside the printer is aluminum. That's a functional part other than the fan shroud, which is SLS nylon 11.
Cool. Fancy.
So
that's fancy.
And then we do have two. We have an in-stop mount that is nylon, and we have two idler standoffs that are nylon as well. But everything functional on the unit is actually aluminum. So that makes a big difference. It makes it very sturdy. One thing people complained about with our Railcorp kits were we had a span of linear rail that wasn't supported. It was just a span of rail. Well, okay. This solved that. So you mount a rail to the top of it, and
then you're set. You're supported.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, I love the aluminum work we've done on the printer. Like, this is our X carriage. That thing's like rock solid.
Wow. I'm just sitting here trying to imagine like how incredibly just solid, and like there must be just absolutely like there's no Z wobble, just so rock solid. It just sounds, that sounds so nice.
With the three, so like the reason why we need six stepper drivers is because the bed is trammed automatically with the machine, and you're not changing knobs or anything.
So it's not like auto leveling that like adjusts the print to suit a dodgy bed. It actually physically moves the bed so that it's perfectly in position, which just makes me so happy as someone who is like the leveling queen or whatever people call me. So, because I always hate auto leveling because I'm like, you're just warping your model. Like, come on.
It's not. Well, like, it's called compensation for a reason. And we found one of the biggest reasons people had so many hard times with like dual printing with like things like the what do they call it, the Chimera, the E3D dual hot end, but it was like in one block and it had the nozzle sitting next to each other. One of the reasons why you have the biggest problem with that is you can set your offset to one nozzle, but if your bed is bowed, if you're compensating for the left nozzle, when it goes over to the right nozzle, the left nozzle might be where it thinks that bow is on the for the right nozzle. Uh-huh. The left nozzle is actually digging into that bow.
Ugh.
So, like, the trick, what everybody would do was they'd put them as close together as possible. But the problem was we were putting a Band-Aid and we were fixing things with duct tape. Issues we had in 2010, we were fixing in 2018 with duct tape. Still. And the reason why we were doing it was because every manufacturer was like, well, the duct tape held for the last 7 years. Just put the duct
tape.
Keep using the duct tape.
It's cheap. It's easy. It's technically working.
We can say we got this filament sensor now. It's like, okay, but there's still 6 inches of duct tape across the entire machine. But you got this new filament sensor, and that's what you're promoting for the printer. And that's what it comes down to. It was like, let's go back to the drawing board and do things right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And like the tramming is something that's done right. We're using a quarter inch Mike 6 bed, which is a cast plate. So it doesn't have the
rolled aluminum thing going on.
It doesn't have the internal stresses. So the Daedalus has the 3-point leveling. It's got three independently driven stepper motors with their own lead screws, of course. And the trick is with like Z wobble, you don't really have Z wobble with the Daedalus, mainly because your Z wobble is when your bent lead screw is overcoming the strength of the Z axis. So when you see like some 3D printer manufacturers, they'll put like a 10 millimeter or 12 millimeter lead screw next to a 12 millimeter rod. Well, that lead screw will defeat that 12 millimeter rod with a wobble. That's why a lot of people had issues with like the TAS 6s with Z wobbling. Mm-hmm. And they also overconstrain the lead screws. They put bearings at the top. That's why you don't constrain the top of your lead screws.
They're only there to lift up and down, right? They're not actually there to be the
strength
of the axis. Yeah.
That was me glancing over at my Prusa being like, did they do that?
Mm. So what Prusa does is it's like an 8 millimeter lead screw and it's like a 10 millimeter hole. So it does have room to wiggle in that area. So what the way the Daedalus is designed is it's got a 20-20 extrusion. It's got a 12 millimeter rail bolted to it. And then the binding, so the yoke, which is what the bed sits on, it is a big chunk of aluminum so that it has to overcome the lead screw for it to show Z wobbling would have to overcome the 20-20 extrusion and the 12 millimeter linear rail, which
is a challenge. Doesn't.
So So like if you move the bed all the way down, you'll see the lead screws whip. And I've had a couple of people wonder if that's it's going to cause Z wobbling, and it doesn't, because I want that lead screw to be able to whip at the top, because then I'm not over constraining the system.
You really thought about this.
How did you learn all this? Like, does it come from your passion, or did you study something? I was just gonna say, like, where did you gather your knowledge from and your ideas and stuff? Like, because
you know a lot of stuff that I would consider not common knowledge.
So like I'm a hardware nerd. I know a bit of the software. I can do all of that if I need to. But where my passion lies is with the hardware itself. So like what makes me happy is I can talk to like Joe Spanier. Guy's a professional engineer. And him and I can have conversations and we can trade ideas. And like that makes me happy. And the way I go about it is I just research the crap out of everything. And I find
Where do you research? Like, where is this wealth of knowledge? Or is it lots of little pockets that you
lots of little pockets. Like, I like to pick the brain of a lot of people. But on top of that, like, online, just reading just as much as possible. Looking at things like, have you ever just read the manual for gates, belts?
No.
Why would you? But yesterday I downloaded a newer version of the Gates belts manual, and it gives you all the formulas for belt tension, proper belt tensions across everything.
A unique kind of nerdery for sure.
Yes. Yeah, and it's like I just have that stuff, so and I keep it around and I highlight it and stuff like that, so that when it comes time I could pull that out and be like, okay, like I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday because they're using 12 millimeter belts on their 3D printer. And they're bragging about how they can hit 150 millimeters a second. It's like, congratulations. But I know for a fact, if you're using NEMA 17s, you're going to bend the shaft on a NEMA 17 if you have the belt at the proper tension for that 12 millimeter belt. And you go,
you called them right out.
And then, well, my whole thing was, it was the fact that it's like, I'm telling you this, that you need to look at this. I'm not telling you that. It's that it doesn't work, because clearly it works. His printer is printing. That's fine. You can get it to work, but getting it to work is different than getting it to work correctly. But for the longest time, 3D printing's evolved. So for the first 5-6 years, that's what 3D printing was. That's how E3D became what it is. It was trial and error. They were fixing something that they saw was an issue, because before that we were drilling nozzles. But we did that because what else could we do?
Yeah.
And we don't need to do that anymore. There's like, we've overcome that hurdle. Let's not overcome it again, because it's been overcome correctly. The things that we do need to go back to are the things that people keep just ignoring. Proper beds. Like, I love seeing that more Mic 6 beds are coming out. Like, that is something that is important.
What is a Mike Six Bed?
So Mike Six Beds are like the cast aluminum plates.
Okay.
So, but the problem is, like, a lot of people think that's the end all be all, but it's not the end all be all because Mike Six is flat, but it's flat. It's cast. So it doesn't have the stresses, but the problem with it is across, so like the best Mike Six we could get across a 36 inch span, the deviation's up to like 0.2 inch. Sorry, not 0.2 inch. 2 thou, which doesn't seem like a lot, but that's in inches, not in millimeters.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know what thou is. I'm lost.
So,
a thousandth of an inch sounds pretty small, though.
But it's not when it comes to 3D printing. When you're messing
with... Yeah, no, I don't... Inches are starting to become weird to me. But... I'm adapting.
I know a friend who prints on a bed of basalt. It's like this piece of stone that's been made flat. And I'm like, dang. So, and people tease about it, but like, it works.
But the biggest problem with Mike 6 is that deviation's across a 30, it's not across a 36 inch length. When they tell you that Mike 6 has this deviation across 36 inches, that deviation could be across the 36 inches, or it could be across an inch, and the rest could be perfectly flat. But that one inch might be a hill. And you never know until you probe it. And not that many people have a $15,000 to $50,000 probe to run across it. So, and if like, the problem is then is like you have a flat plate. If you have a bow in it, you're going to have to use a granite slab with marking material to find it where there's a hill or a valley. Like, don't, it's not the end all be all. There's a reason why, like, our mag beds that we use for the Daedalus, it's Mike 6, then it's shipped off to a Blanchard grinder, and then Blanchard ground, and then we're given a birth date, and it's because it's probed, and it gives us. So, like, even after it's Blanchard ground, it's probed, and I'm given a map of it off of it's probed on a Haas VF6, I believe. And then we're able to get a map, and the map is not flat, even with the flattest stuff we can get. But it's a leaps and bounds. It's what we can get as of now. And it works for things like if you're just trying to push plastic out of a nozzle. It works.
Which is what we're doing.
except for when you're pushing it out of a nozzle and you're first layer is 0.02 and you're doing it at 100 millimeters a second, that's when it makes a difference.
That's
what this can do. And that's why we need it to be as flat as possible.
It's so extra. All your machines are so extra.
Well, I am definitely understanding the cost. Like, it's one of those things that, like, you're explaining all this stuff, and I'm like, this explains, like, because very recently asked the internet a little bit because I wanted to hear from people. I wanted to hear about other 3D printers. I didn't like. I was kind of like, don't tell me about Prusa's. Don't tell me about Creality. And I listed a couple others that I was like, don't mention these. Tell me something else. And yours is obviously Twitter, wasn't it? One. Yeah, yeah. And yours is obviously one of the other. And so, like, I absolutely, like, I already knew about your printers, but I obviously, like, I kind of looked again. And, like, your printers are incredible. They are, unfortunately, outside of my price range. So I was kind of like, you know, I'm unfortunately not going to be getting one of these right now. But I can see the cost. Like, I can see where that's going. And that's really a nice thing. Because sometimes I look at some of these 3D printers and it's like, this is $8,000.
Yeah.
Why is this $8,000? Like, I'm not saying it's not necessarily worth it, but why is it $8,000? I don't necessarily know by just looking at the spec sheet. But like, as you're kind of explaining the stuff that goes into the Daedalus, I'm kind of like, okay, like I can see where the cost is going. And that explains so much.
So pretty much every printer under $10,000 we've bought and put it against it. And so far it's either outrun or just outperformed outright. everything we could throw at it. So the price, like the big thing, like I have like a Raze Pro sitting down here, biggest waste of money I ever bought. But it was something I wanted to compare it against. It clogs like crazy. It was it's something that and I've told them, like, I just sent them a long list of like, this is how this can be fixed. No, we're not doing that. It's like, all right, well, this is the simplest way to fix it. Put a bigger fan on it. Yeah, we're not doing that. It's like, all right, well, then I'm going to tell
you. Is it always about this? Is it always about money?
Yeah. So I've used the Ultimakers, and I've used CraftBots, and I've used a lot of like the higher end printers and the
prosumer or whatever they call it market.
Yeah, and there's corners cut that on those that I just like. Don't get me wrong, there was corners cut on this. There's a reason why there's not aluminum or sheet metal sides, and there's not. I think that's pretty much the only corner I cut.
Is there a need for sheet metal sides? Or like,
I have some coming to play with, but
it doesn't.
I quite like the acrylic, like personally. So,
I mean, there's some other things I would have liked to be able to do to it. There's some servos and closed loop steppers I've been playing with, but I mean, like,
I do think there's a difference as well between cutting a corner and not including the next level up, like that, like choosing to put things at this level is not necessarily cutting corners, knowing that you could put it at this level. Cutting a corner is very much a, oh, well, we can save money if we get rid of this thing. There is a difference. It doesn't sound like you've cut any corners, because I would guess that the acrylic versus sheet metal siding is not actually cutting a corner. It doesn't actually affect the quality.
So every printer we build has a 50-hour test print process on it.
Wow.
And the acrylic is not put on until it's about to be packed, because we don't want to scratch acrylic and stuff like that.
It's not a
functional part of the printer at all. I mean, we've tried to cut no corners, let's put it that way. There, of course, there's some things that we can
all
improve corners. And there's but there's like there's a reason why the majority of Daedaluses that have sold are sitting on benches and shops. They're not so much sitting on the shelf of someone's house, because like there's a price point thing there.
Yeah, absolutely. And
it was built to be something to be more of a workhorse printer. And the way, like, I tell everybody when they ask me, like, what printer they should get, I tell them that the best printer, or they'll be like, oh, I wish I had that printer, but I have this printer. Or they always have these dreams of the next printer they're going to get. But the best printer you could have at right now is the printer that you can use, and that's the printer you have.
Yeah, agree with that.
If you have like a Prusa Mini, yes, you may have to print more things and stick them together, but a Prusa Mini is still a great printer to have on your shelf. An Ender 3, you can get an Ender 3 to print very well, but you've got to put the time into it. There's a lot of things you can do to make a cheaper printer work. Yes, you may have to print more of the set, like split the model up. You may have to add these upgrades. In the next year, you may put what you put into the, like, bought the printer for in just upkeeping the printer, but you've got a printer. You tell me another thing that you're going to make a specific part with if you don't have a 3D printer. For the next 6 months that you're saving all this money to go from a Prusa Mini to a, like a Taz Mini or something like that, what are you doing for those 6 months that you're saving that money, when you can just get the Mini now? And I like, there's a difference between getting the Mini or like getting a cheap printer and getting a dangerous printer. There's absolutely
no A8s for anybody.
No. Don't need a fire starter. There's, I'm sure you can find sticks in your yard. So like go with something that's reputable and then start with something, and then don't just be like, oh, well, all I've got is this printer, so I can't do that.
You better can. To have something.
Like an Ender 3 can print really nice at 15 millimeters a second. Yes, it's going to take you a day to do something that would have taken an hour on a unit like this. But guess what? Tomorrow you'll have it. If you didn't print it, guess what you wouldn't have tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, something is better than nothing. Progress over perfection. And
break, which is actually a large part of why I've kind of finally gone, you know what? I just need to get another printer. Like, I need to stop. Yeah. Kind of emming and awing about what's the perfect printer, because it's better to have something that can print than nothing
at all. So what I suggest, like, one of the coolest customers I ever had was this guy. He makes some awesome things. Billy, I think you know him. He makes the pens and stuff.
DSK Fernando. Yeah.
Fernando.
Yeah.
So he reached out to me when we were doing the rail cores and said, I have a Prusa. I believe it was an MK3. He's like, I want another printer, but I have all these stipulations. He wanted it. He needs another printer because, like, the room he had it in, it would wake up his kids or something like that. And there was all these stipulations of, like, why he needed this other printer. He just sent me an email with it. And when I read over it, I was like, okay, well, the rail core could do all the things he wanted. It could do it quickly. But now he's going to spend $1,500 or more on a rail core. He's got to now learn all the intricacies of a new printer. I was like, I would highly suggest just buying another MK3 or buying two more MK3s, because you're going to have three print heads moving, and all the profiles you used for the printer you already got set up and you've got awesome prints off of, you can move across. Now, I sent that email, and then all of a sudden I got an order notification on my site, and then he sent me an email. He said, because you were willing to sell someone else's product just because you think that's going to be the best fit for me, I'm going to buy your printer. And like, that's what it's been. Like, I never got into the 3D printing to make $1 million, because like, I still do consulting work for the medical field and emergency services. And like, I still do that, and I still get a paycheck from that and stuff like that. So like, if I wasn't selling 3D printers and building 3D printers, I would be fine. So that's why, like, the majority of the stuff like I make from 3D printing goes back into the community by like sponsoring things and giving away things and stuff like that, or just trying to help people out.
Yeah, I want to talk about this a little bit, because you do a lot of that, and you do it really quietly. Like, you've supported this show for a long time. And the thing we were hinting at when we first opened was because Joe was my top patron at the time, and as top patron, I would do a shout out. You're not anymore. Did you not know for a couple of weeks? I'm sorry. Should I have told you? I'm sorry.
But like, hold on, as top patron,
I was like, well, I'll do a special shout out for anyone who's a top patron on the call. And I was like, are you cool with that? Like, I was checking in to make sure he was cool with me, you know, saying his name on the internet. And he was like, oh, don't do that, which is something you've done before. You refuse any credit for your awesomeness. So he's like, don't do that. Highlight someone cool in the community that you like instead. And I was like, that's a great idea. And that is what spawned this whole show. And then obviously you've been a sponsor for this show for a very long time. So, Hold on, are you dying?
Sorry. It's your battery. No, it's just my light. My light died.
Okay.
Hold on. I can plug it in. Sorted. It's fine.
But yeah, I know you don't only support me. You support lots of other people, because I'm close enough with enough people to know that comes out. But you're very, very quiet about it all. And like, yeah, where does this come from in you? It's just like, you're such a beautiful, supportive human, and emotionally too. Like, you've always got time for anyone who's having a hard time or who needs some help or whatever. Like, where does your loveliness come from? It's just, I don't know.
When I got into 3D printing, I got started off of what I made working on an ambulance. And like what Faye and I talked about earlier, like we don't get paid much when we're working on an ambulance. I think I started out getting paid working 24-hour shifts. I think I made like $10 an hour is what I started at.
That's so painful.
Literally.
So like I was working 100-hour weeks. For a year straight, I worked 100-hour weeks because I wanted to buy a house. I know what the struggles are like to like try to get there. And like I got very lucky. I went to medic school and got as many certs as I possibly could. Got headhunted by a company that I now do consulting for, but like I only work for them like 4 days a year, and I get paid a 40-hour a week paycheck for an entire like every week for a year.
Nice.
And I don't really do anything for them. I'm just there in case they need me.
Yeah, just don't tell them that. You're working too hard all the time. No, because it's
like emergency stuff, yeah. Right? Like but, it's like emergency like, stuff you do, right? Like consulting for emergency sort of situations.
Yeah.
Like random stuff.
I do their disaster response and stuff like that. And that's from like when I first got out of high school, the first thing I did was I was looking for something to do. I went to the fire academy right out of high school, and then started working on the fire department. And then shortly after that, the fire department I was with was laying everybody off just because financially things weren't great in 2010. And then I went straight over. I had a little bit of money saved up, and I went straight over and I started working for the American Red Cross. Not the greatest place to work with. But I was a disaster tech for them, and I traveled to floods, tornadoes, hurricanes and stuff like that. And pretty much if somebody's house burnt down or something like that, I was the one there to make sure that they were taken care of make sure they had somewhere to go that night. And so I did that. Like that was my
such a beautiful
my personal projects. And then always carried over. I joined our district's task force. So then like I went to things like the Hurricane Sandy that hit the East Coast. I drove in the night before the hurricane hit and stayed at a military base in my ambulance while a hurricane hit. And then immediately once it cleared, we were out, and I worked out there for 6 weeks working and sleeping in my ambulance. Like I always felt like everybody had to, it was everybody's duty to like give back to their community. I like that idea, and that's why I joined. Like, my whole goal was I was going to go to school. I had a bunch of scholarships to go for pre-med. And I was like, well, I could do that and spend 4 years in school before I even can start helping people. Or I could just join the fire department and I could do my thing for my community here. So I did that. And then like, now that I've kind of done that, I still help out. Like, I shut my business down for about 3 months. Beginning of 2020, because I was called up because everybody with a medical cert was they tried to activate to help with COVID relief. Mm-hmm. So I went and did that, and I was just fulfilling orders for our resellers, and that was it. I'd come home at night and do that. The rest of the time I would go and I'd work at hospitals where needed, or just help with distribution with the task force and stuff like that. So
yeah, I think I remember talking to you during that time. You came on the Murph
after
dark.
Yeah.
Murph,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that I've always just tried to help where I could. And then like having a business that we were doing well, or like we still are doing very well. And but we try to give back as much as possible. And like we've been criticized by some people. They're like, oh, you just do that for tax credits and stuff like that. But it's like, just so you know,
people
like,
are so like they can't comprehend that sometimes people do things to be nice and to help others and not for some sort of weird selfish reason.
The funny thing is the majority of stuff we do is outside of the US. So we can't, there's no tax incentive for that. You can't do anything. That like we're still paying taxes on those, that money.
You support me on Patreon and here as sponsoring the show, and I'm all the way in Australia.
So I'm taxi like, here. whenever I find something that I think can like just be shown more attention to, it tends to be like I jump on Twitch all the time and I just like give subs to, I'll jump into someone's stream and just give subs just because like they seem like they're enjoying what they do. You need to show them appreciation type of thing. And like when you were, I think I was bugging you to do something, and then like I found out you secretly started a Patreon, and I was like, I was like, Link. Which, by the way, I need to know who's beating me.
Loyal Moses.
At some point. Oh no, he's not.
Have you guys got a war going on? Is this a thing?
Loyal. But him and I, like, I love Loyal to death. That guy is awesome. He's just a down-to-earth guy. He did this to me on Chaos Cortex patron. And she reached out, like, I saw their video and my name was below Loyal. And I was like, no, he didn't. So I went on there and I made sure that I upped it because I will not be beat by that man.
This is the best kind of competition. I'm not a very competitive person, but I support this kind of competitive.
Loyal and I were like, if we're on like Joel's live streams or something like that, I always just try to one up him. And like we'll be on Twitter, like messaging each other the whole time. And we just like there could be so much drama in this community, and it's just there's no reason for it. So my goal is to make drama that literally isn't real drama. You can talk about it and you can speculate that like I've heard speculations that Loyal and I don't like each other and stuff, and in all reality, Loyal and I are laughing and joking with each other, and it's just to what it comes down to is a couple people are like, nope, they're fighting again in the comments. But in all reality, Loyal and I are like, it brings attention to a streamer. It brings attention to what they're doing and it supports them. And normally they're like giving something away during that time or something. And
it's also coordinated. You guys are coordinated. That you're doing, but you're not sure what the other one is doing. Like, nah, y'all are on the same side. It's a coordinated thing. It's a bit.
Pretty much all drama that I start on like Twitter and stuff like that, like the great pizza debate, it's all coordinated with the people. I'm starting pizza debate like because
more drama should be about pizza. Like
yes, Green Gate. I would like some. Sorry.
The guys at Green Gate were trying to say that New York pizza was better, and it's okay. They're wrong. They know they're wrong.
I'm guessing you are Chicago deep dish.
Chicago deep dish. And
I gotta say, I do love a pizza with loads of toppings that's like big and chunky. And yeah, I'm not at all about these. I put three leaves of basil and some tomato paste on it, and I'm calling it. I'm like, no, that's not a pizza. That's like a flatbread with a sauce. Like, not like a saucy flatbread.
So, like, I just like berate and just destroy New York style pizza's will to live. That's the goal. And
this is what drama should actually be about.
Let's
be honest, like the drama that just gets started, it's for nothing. Normally the drama in the community tends to just be about absolutely nothing. It's just like my feelings are hurt because this person's doing something cooler than what I'm doing, but I'm not gonna say that. I'm going to say it's because of this. And it's like,
Did you just describe my Reddit life?
Yeah. I've got friends in the community that, like, will be like, oh, yeah, like, I'll say something about, like, something you're doing. And they're like, oh, you know why Billy's popular. It's like, yeah, because she makes cool stuff. It's just like, what? It's just everybody belittles people by what they do. And it's like, don't get me wrong. I'll belittle a company by them doing something dumb.
Companies are different from individuals.
Companies are not people. Yeah.
Yeah. Companies are not people. Let's be real clear.
I mean, like I poke fun at some companies, and it's less of like, I don't like you, I'm going to make fun of you. It's more of, you can do better, you should do better.
I'm the same. Yeah. I think there have been a few times where I've been like really firm about a company in the 3D printing world, and I could probably name them on 3 fingers. And it's always been like, I really just want you to do a lot better. Like, I just think this is not okay and it should be done better. Like, because this is manipulative, or it's misleading, or it's unhealthy in some way and not okay.
Like, there's one company now, they're like, we've been around for 10 years. It's like, no, you haven't, because you got bought a year ago and you went out of business. It's like, you can't,
you reset the clock there.
None of the real team is there. It's just a label now. You're starting your own thing. You haven't been around for 10 years. And then this evening, this local company that I buy filament from, and I do like them, 3DX Tech, they're like, oh, we have an open source printer. And I was like, no, you don't. So I started looking for all the source files. They call it an open source printer because you can use off the shelf material.
How can they sell 3D printing stuff and not understand that? What?
I think they just don't care.
Do you know who was known for saying that? It was XYZ was saying that when they stopped shipping their material, they're like, this is an open source printer now. Because XYZ had a real bad issue where, like, they sold a bunch of printers in the U.S., but the problem was they were all chipped, and they would all have these issues.
Specific filament, and then
there's so many high schools and elementary schools and stuff like that had these printers that they don't work. They worked for a little while, but they clogged. There was no support or anything like that. So, it just fell off. Fell off all of a sudden, and
it's people felt manipulated, and they felt like it gave them a bad taste in the mouth to think of that 3D printer sitting in the corner of the science lab because it wasn't working, and they had all these dramas with it, and they felt, you know, that they were gypped, basically. And that's like bad for the whole 3D printing community. It's not okay.
You can just say a thing is a thing, and like 9 times out of 10 nobody can do anything about that. Well, it admittedly makes me think about the fact that PLA is always listed as recyclable, and it's
good luck finding somewhere to recycle it.
Biodegradable.
Biodegradable. Yeah, it's always listed
under high pressure, high heat in an environment with no oxygen. Technically, you can slowly compost it.
Yeah, so like they can legally they can claim it, but it's kind of not true, and everyone just does it, and it's just kind of an acceptable part of things. But it does just go to show you that people like to just say, oh yeah, no, my printer is totally open source. It's like,
well, what
that word, it does not mean what you think it means.
I wouldn't have called them out publicly on Twitter, which I did, if they would have put that just on their site, and like, I would have just sent them a message being like, hey, by the way, this is not open source. But what they did was they released a thing on Autodesk. They sent a press briefing out to Autodesk, and it's on the Autodesk site saying that this is an open source industrial grade printer. Autodesk
didn't even check it. That's that's crap. Yeah.
So it's just like, apparently it was posted 2 weeks ago, but they just promoted it on their Twitter. And I was like, no, that's not how this works.
No, I mean, you're right to call it out.
I said, if you guys post the files, I might be wrong. If not, I was like, congratulations on not chipping your filament.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
Congratulations on doing something we stopped doing the a bare long minimum. Time ago.
Yeah. Congratulations on doing the bare minimum.
And the thing I was thinking of too was M3D were trying to, like, on the subreddit, they were talking about this new hot end, this new nozzle that they were making where they could blend filament. And they were like, it's CMYK, so it's full color. And I'm like, well, no, it's not full color, because when you print CMYK onto paper, you have the white from the paper. So to get anything even vaguely resembling full color, you would at least need CMYK and white. You would at least need five colors. And
I explained this really kindly the first time.
Yeah, and there's many other issues with that thing. But I explained this really kindly the first time, and I was like, hey, just so you know, this isn't actually full color. Here's the reasons. And then they just kept saying it, and I was like, no. And so I just kept being like, here's the full breakdown of why this is misleading and why this is not okay to say. Like, because someone will take this home, think I can print any color, and oh no, you can't actually. You can only print dark colors or light colors or, you know, colors without red or colors without blue. Like, it's not the same. It's not full color, and it's not okay to call it that. Like, yeah.
Well, there's a few public service announcements that should come out of what they did around that time. Like, they started their own... They started promoting that they have they're now launching on a new crowdfunding platform for their printers, and that's where everybody had to buy that quad head and the their bigger printer that they made, the Pro Mega, stuff like that. You had to buy it through their open source or their new crowdfunding thing. Come to find out, that crowdfunding platform was owned by them. The only things on that platform was a rebranded, like, off of just a regular assembly line headphones that they were trying to sell for like $200 that you can get from like Alibaba for like 19. And one other thing, none of those had ever, they never shipped. And then the address for the crowdfunding platform was the address for the M3D facility.
What they did was they took
in pre-orders, but they didn't have to, they weren't held to the standards of pre-orders of you have to ship this thing or you owe the money back. What they did was they said, here, pre-order this. But by the way, if things go belly up, it was a crowdfunding platform.
That's
so...
I didn't think my opinion of them could go down anymore after their, that, but holy
What they
moly.
Launched was a website
wow.
called Fit to
no
Launch.
No wonder they died.
They're the only... They're not gone is the problem.
They're not gone?
They're still trying to sell their stuff on their site.
Doesn't take much to be decent, you know? Like, not even a good, awesome human being like Joe here. But, like, decent. Just decent would be good. That doesn't take much effort to not
the bar is not
people.
Terribly high.
Yeah, like, come on. Wow.
So the way I go about it is I like to say, just don't be a trash human being. But it's not the most, friendly thing to tell someone. Just don't be a trash human being. But sometimes
here in Australia, we say it a little differently and it's even less kind.
Hey,
the N-word starts with a C.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They say that here too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've fallen in love recently with some British shows.
Oh, what ones? What have you been watching?
Countdown, 8 out of 10 cats do Countdown, and Taskmaster, and stuff like that. I had to find it all online. And it just makes my heart warm and tingly. Because, some of the things they say, it's just like, sometimes it's just like, they'll just say it and be like, meh, if you don't like it, don't like it, I don't care. It's like, okay.
I used to work for a plumbing company, and this poor woman, she came from Canada and she didn't like swearing. And I'm like, why are you working for a plumbing company in Australia? Oh my God. So we would try not to swear, but we had, I'd been working in construction for a very long time at that point, and working in plumbing, and it's like, it's gonna happen. Like, we're gonna say fuck sometimes, and I'm sorry. And it really bothered her, and I was just like,
oh, God.
I know we should be accommodating, but also,
That's also such a hilarious stereotype. Such a hilarious stereotype as well.
It's just weird as well that like there's some words that in the US that like that's a word you don't say. But in like the UK, it's like some people say it, like the C word is very prevalent in the UK.
Yep. UK and Australia both. It is a much more normal insult term.
Yeah.
Like I definitely would say, oh my God, this is so fucked in like meetings with the CEO. Like that would be, I would do that. That wouldn't be, no one would bat an eyelid.
That's standard Australia.
Yeah.
I mean, like, from right out of high school, like I didn't curse in high school or anything like that, mainly because like grew up in a small town where like it was more out of respect for your parents because you knew they would hear it.
Same.
And like I grew up in the Bible Belt.
That's that neck of the woods.
But like I got out of there and walked into a fire station and like it was all out from there.
I went theater and then into construction, and I'm like, my third day on a construction site, there was a guy who's like, oi mate, yelling across the room, mate, I've been really good, I haven't said the fucking C word for 3 days. I was like, I know where I am now. It was beautiful. I was like, I'm considering that my induction, and I know where I am now. And yeah, it's just been a part of my speech ever since.
Like I went from like being like I lived a normal life, right? Like as a high schooler and stuff like that, and I was a nerd. And then I went into the emergency services, and it's like your humor immediately goes dark. You laugh at things like when you look back, and you'd be like, "I probably shouldn't have laughed at that." Like, and you like you never really go back, though, right? From that.
Like,
yeah. And then, like, you say things you just would never have said before.
Yeah, you gotta laugh to keep from crying sometimes. Weirdly enough, in the UK, I feel like there's this really interesting kind of divide where you have Brits who are incredibly polite, incredibly proper, don't necessarily swear in front of certain company, like, are very kind of like.
Yeah.
And then you have the Brits that are like Australians, who are just all cussing all the time. Don't give a fuck. Like, and there does seem to be like a very stark kind of divide on that.
It's probably to do with wealth, if it's anything like here, it's a class.
It's a class thing.
Yeah. Like my parents didn't swear much because they came from really wealthy families, but I was like, we weren't wealthy me growing up, but they like, my dad particularly was very particular about how I spoke, and I would never swear around my dad. But then, yeah. Went to a dodgy high school, went to a worked on construction
site. It's all out the window.
Yeah.
I was gonna
move us slightly back on topic.
I was gonna ask if there was
anything else you wanted to talk about before we skedaddle
before we wrap up. Yeah.
Do the socials and stuff. But yeah, is there anything else you wanted to talk about? Tell the people.
I mean
obviously go check out the dead list, it's amazing. So I would say that, I mean, on like, his behalf.
I'm bad at promoting my own stuff.
Solid.
If you need a 3D printer, I got 3D printers.
Very cool 3D printer.
But yeah, I mean, like,
you're clearly someone to throw dollars at for sure.
Mm-hmm.
If you got the dollars to throw and you want a solid 3D printer, throw the dollars. Printer,
please. Yes.
Like the way I see the dead list, like where it sits. I try to be as realistic as possible. It's like, if you're wanting to be like get into the hobby, it's not a printer for you. If you're wanting to get started and stuff like that, I've sold probably more Prusas and stuff like that than my own printers.
They don't even know.
Mainly because, yeah, I should be getting like royalties or something.
You should. We should talk to Matt about that.
An affiliate link.
Because I'd be like, what do you want? Like, what's your experience? And if they're like, well, this will be my first 3D printer, I'm like, this is not the printer for you. You should definitely look at this, break it. It's easy to fix. Like,
yours is like that next level. Like, you've been playing with printers for a while and you want some just extra. But like, extra printer.
Ready to level up.
Or are you using it for work, right?
Yeah. Well, like, the like 3D printers fill a niche, and it, and that they picked that niche from the design concept. This was like, this niche was picked specifically for out of the box reliability, easy to manufacture. Like when we were manufacturing fully assembled rail cores, those were 13 hour builds. Two people, 13 hours. It was, it's not something like that is production hell. Whereas like this is one person, 3 hours, and they have it fully assembled and it's printed. But that's the difference between a printer that was designed to be manufactured, and whereas the rail core was a project for two guys that designed that printer, and they designed it to where, what can I use that's off the shelf? Whereas I designed this as I need to, if it needs to be made a certain way, we'll make it a certain way. But there's differences between, like, just because you can 3D print something, just because you have a hammer, not everything's a nail. Use the tool that's right for the job. Yes, you could prototype 3D printing, but sometimes even 3D printing is not the best prototyping method. There's so many, like, vacuum formers are so easy to get these days.
I still want a bit of cardboard, like, you know? Cardboard can be.
Cardboard is a beautiful thing. There's like vacuum forming is easy to get now. There's so many easy ways to get things milled, or like even if you want to do small things that are injection molded, there's ways of doing that now. Don't fill your toolbox with hammers. Just because you have 15 3D printers doesn't mean you will be able to do the job right. You see what I'm saying? Like, that's the biggest thing. It's like just getting people to understand it. It's just like, congratulations, you bought 6 Ender 3s. That's awesome. But now we've got to make this, and it's this large thing, large flat thing. Well, how do you make a large flat thing? Well, you don't make it with a 3D printer. You can make it with like a CNC router or just casting of some sort. There's so many different ways of doing things. And like, that's the community. I think that's one thing that's limiting the community, is that like we all see that 3D printers are like the end all be all. And we just need to look outside of our 3D printers.
I feel that. I think, yeah, and Faye, you as well, like we both come from something else to 3D printing, so it seems natural for us to blend it with our other stuff. So, and then everyone's always like, you're doing such innovative things to like, and it's just because we're used to blending stuff. Like we've already.
Yeah. We didn't start with 3D printing and go to other things. We started with art. We started with haberdashery, we started with, you know, with costuming, we started with other things, and then haberdashery. Yeah.
like ribbons and bows and millinery and like
hats. That sounds like you're up to no good. Like if I said, oh, I'm haberdashering,
I love a good haberdasher.
Haberdashery is shenanigans. All of the pretty lace. For sure.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
is shenanigans.
Yeah, you can lose yourself in a haberdashery store.
We definitely, our approach to 3D printing is coming from a very different place than a lot of people who are approaching either from a more kind of like technological kind of like, or electronic based sort of, like you're a hardware nerd, you know, like you come at this from a very different place than we have. And so, yeah, we tend to use these tools a little differently, which is, I think, maybe part of what makes us unique. I don't know that I don't know that there's a ton of people out there like it's perhaps slightly more unique.
Billy was doing the live streams on Twitch, and she was making a dress, I believe. And like I was watching her making her patterns, and I was looking at that, and she was talking about all this stuff, and I was like, so like sheet metal work. Like this is like sheet metal work, like designing sheet metal components.
It's all about
and
heads.
It's like, so it's
see,
like,
whereas I see pattern drafting as reverse 3D modeling.
Yeah. Unwrapping it. Yeah.
Yeah. But have you ever designed something in sheet metal?
It's kind of the same. It just unwraps. Yeah.
Yeah.
You get it.
Sounds like I could do it.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing is like,
don't give me any ideas.
You guys found that path where it's like, I have these skills. These are the skills that are in my toolbox. And sorry, I referenced everything as a toolbox because, like, my first lieutenant on the fire department was like, make sure you fill your toolbox. And he didn't mean, like, so that's just stuck with me forever.
He didn't mean
so
a literal sure one, fill, yeah.
Yeah, fill your toolbox with skills. And then, but, like, you had those skills from, like, doing flaunting your haberdashery and whatnot.
I've never actually done haberdashery. I want to be honest. I just want.
You just like to say it.
Cool. We should do that. We can.
Like
I kind of assume Billy has that,
so. Oh, I'm sure. But but like pattern making stuff like that, and like you can bring that in. And the whole thing is like, if you got started in 3D printing by just starting in 3D printing, you have more skills in your toolbox than you think you do.
Mm.
Subtractive and additive manufacturing have a lot of things in common. Really, the big thing is your material, and is your thing a spinny bit or is it a melty bit?
Yeah.
That's your choices there. You could, like, X, Y, and Z, they tend to be the same thing. Like, it's a motion component. Once you know the motion component, the whole thing is like most people who are machinists, they're like, all right, I'm a machinist. It's like, congratulations. If something goes wrong on your mill, do you know how to fix it? And sometimes they do, the skilled ones. At other times they go, yeah, we call the maintenance guy. We've got millwrights for a reason. But at the end of the day, if you go to a hobby mill or something like that and something breaks, you go, well, it's my Z axis or it's my Y axis. What is it driven by? Is it driven by lead screws? Is it driven by belts? Or, you know, like you can break it down by what you know off of. You can go from an A-net A8 to things a fire starter, right? And then you can start fires on a CNC router, right? Everything's a smoke machine if you do it wrong enough.
Building up.
Yep. That's very true. That is definitely the quote of the day. I've
never heard this before. That's amazing.
That is the quote of the day.
I love that. Oh my God. So good.
So I'm like, branch out. That's what I'm trying to get at. Branch out.
For sure. For sure. I think it only fuels creativity doing that. Like, just keep doing weird stuff and you find weird ways to relate them to your other stuff. Like, it's good. It's all good.
The experience you had when you figured out, like, I could make this in 3D printing, you're going to have that same experience when you go, why the hell was I making this out of 3D printed material when I could have done it this way, done it right, with a better material, better properties, faster, and guess what? I don't have to do it ever again. It's one time, done. 3D printing's great for certain things. It's not great for everything.
No, this is very true. This is wisdom. It's really funny because I think that's a thing that comes up in like every other meta maker.
Yeah, it is a common
theme.
So many
people have their own stories around the just because you can 3D print a thing doesn't mean you should.
We all love really 3D printers, but sometimes,
Well, like Joe Spanier and I, like you, I think you did it what 2 weeks ago.
I think that was my latest one. Yeah, he's still up.
Yeah, I think it was the latest one.
It's the latest one.
Okay. Yeah, I just didn't know when you filmed it. The day you filmed it.
Yes, that was 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Yes. Sorry. Yeah. So you caught up that day.
Yeah. Well, him and I met up that day and like we walked around a gas station for 2.5 hours. A tiny gas station. We found some weird gas station in between our two houses and we met up there with masks on and everything, standing far apart, just walking around, just talking about just stuff. And the reason why I love Joe so much is like he does everything. Like when he's got CNC routers, like he builds his own and stuff like that. And he built his own laser cutter and now he's got a depth of knowledge that's crazy. And like he comes up with some crazy things. Like I swear, I used to make fun of Joe because I would tell him that I've never seen a good 3D print from him because normally he couldn't show them because they were under NDA, and all this stuff was just like weird because he'd build like these big wooden 3D printers, and like the print would be the ugliest thing in the world, but the fact that it worked was the beautiful thing.
Yeah,
and Joe will tell you.
I have a strong appreciation for giant 3D printers that make kind of weird, ugly things. Yeah. I follow some great ones on Instagram, actually.
Joe's a hardware guy like I am. Like, his fun is building the machine. Mm. And
yeah, I respect that. That's not me.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I love that there's like this dichotomy. Well, it's not really dichotomy because they're not conflicting. Like some people do love making things with the machines and also tinkering on the machines or, you know, building, designing the machines. But yeah, there is definitely two very strong groups. There's a Venn diagram overlap, but they're very strong. And the people that like using the machines and the people like making the machines, there's like, they're very strong in the community.
Yeah, no, admittedly, that is the thing that I find often. Yeah, you should get this printer. You just have to source all the pieces yourself and then completely wire it and build it from scratch. And I'm like,
it's totally easy. I'm like, God, no. God, that's my nightmare.
No, that doesn't sound like fun to me.
There's a special place in hell that you visit when you want to source your own bomb. And like I've visited several times. They have my name and stuff like that. They know me when I walk in the door because I'm just like, time to source stuff. Time to fall into my unhappy place.
No.
Just because like sourcing can be one of the, like there's a reason why I don't work with resellers anymore, let's put it that way, because like resellers are like,
fair enough,
you the only thing you do is you put stuff in a box and you ship it to us and then we sell it and make money for moving up, putting a sticker on a box. Well, it's like, do you understand what it's like to source all of that? Like I was told several times that I didn't do anything. It's like sourcing alone takes a long, and then the whole thing
special
is
you can't for people have watching,
yeah,
and not like, just listening. That's what I think about that.
So, like sourcing, you can't just source one thing. Like you can't be like, all
right,
this.
No, you got to buy hundreds and thousands of a thing,
and you got to test them and make sure it's the right the thing. And
like, yeah, you have to have a part. This is your standard part. You have to have a backup of that part and a backup for your backup. And that really came true last year when literally everything shut down.
Yeah.
And I bought all the stock of everything I could get to make it happen. Like the Daedalus, I wanted to release that thing at Murph. The problem was I couldn't get parts for anything. I wish I would have because, holidays are like the worst time to release a 3D printer just because like you get bombarded by sales and then you miss life. Like that's what happened at the Railcore too. Like Joel telling it a review, we went from selling 10 printers a month to selling 10 printers a day for 6 weeks. And it took us like 6 months to catch up on orders. Like orders just kept coming. And as we'd ship out so many a day, we'd get about half as many again. So just to catch up, it was just like
a Hydra.
It was ridiculous.
An order Hydra.
Yep.
Oh, and like, this has been so good. I know Faye has to skedaddle. So.
Yeah. No, we need to wrap up. I'm afraid.
Yeah. Do you have to go right now, or should we say goodbye?
We can wrap. We can. Wrap
okay. Cool.
Up.
Okay. Where can people find you? Where are your socials?
For some reason, I thought you were talking about social media. The company is at pro_r3d, and then my personal is at joseph_pogo. I'll be doing some more things there because I am transitioning my office to start doing more streaming stuff. And then my personal shop, I now have Heat in there, so I'll be doing some streams from there. And then Twitch, it's Project R3D over on Twitch. And then we don't talk about Facebook. And then we also have a Discord, of course. That people can find the information about that on our Twitter as well.
And below in the description. Yeah. We'll put that in the description. Yeah.
And our website is projectr3d.com. So
beautiful. Oh, thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, thanks this was wonderful.
I feel very honored to have gotten to have you on the show. This has been like almost like a very special episode. Like meet the creator of Meet a Maker the inspiration or what have you. It's excellent.
Creator. I like it. The creator of Meet a Maker.
I think Billy planted the seed. I just poured a little water on it once and she
did the
rest. You
definitely planted the seed and I was watering. It was your idea. And then you're a beautiful, beautiful soul. And I feel very privileged to have spent this time with you. And thank you for all the beautiful things you do in this community.
And I'm gonna need I'm gonna need you to let me know how much more I need to be loyal. Because I will not let this stand. Just so you know.
We're not playing. Oh, you're too good. You're too good. We will talk later.
Yep. Y'all Bye. Take care, all right?
I love you. See you next time.
Bye.
I am loving making this series, and if you are too, please support me on Patreon so I can keep making more. Top supporters will appear in this list of legends. You can meet another maker here, and here's a video YouTube thinks you'll like. If you want to catch up with any of us, all our socials are in the description below. See you later!